and to go any place that He wants us to go and to do the things that He's called us to do. And the sad thing is that many people in today's world live never really believing that. Some of you have some of those promises. I stayed with Debbie and Mike last night and saw some of those little promises that she has. But you can remember back growing up, some of the things that you experienced, perhaps some of those slides brought back memories of you as you were growing up. And God takes us and creates us into something very, very special. And not only creates us into something very, very special, but in the creating of us, behind us, He creates a very, very special plan as to what He wants us to be and to experience and to do. And I'm excited about the time for us to be together today to focus on what is our purpose. What is it that God wants us to be about? And here's a question. If God has told us throughout His Word that we are a promise, that we're to live an abundant life, to live fulfilled, why is it that there's a major cry throughout the world today for significance and worth? Why is that? Every place that you read, especially as you get into the newspapers, as you listen to the radio, the news, underneath all the situations, the circumstances, the happenings throughout the world today, there's a major underlying cry for significance and value. And yet God's told us, you have it. You are worthy. You are of My worth, and you have My significance. I want you to begin thinking with me as we spend the next 30 minutes together, beginning to look at what it takes to really be significant. Not just a significance as the world looks at it, but what does it take to really have an eternal significance? And I would like for you to break up into groups now, about three, and make a list of five things that you would say that the world is going after to give them significance. Just jot down in your groups of three. If you were to nail down a list of five things, what would you say are the five key things that people in today's world are going after to give them significance? Okay, let's get back together and let's hear from you. If you could perhaps gain one spokesman from your group to just stand up and read off your list. What about over here? What were some of the things that you came up with as far as what the world is looking for to give them significance?
Well, we came up with six.
Okay, good.
Money, approval, success, fame, power, and intelligence.
Okay. Fame, intelligence. What about some other group? Just pop up real fast and let us hear what you...
We came up with almost the same thing.
Anything different?
Approval.
Approval from others. Okay. Something in this group here? Anything different? Carrie?
Beauty and family, like they want family while they do well.
Okay. Good, beauty and family, family success especially. Okay, material possessions. Linda, what about your group?
Well, one that's kind of different is they don't just drug scene or alcohol dependence just to be accepted. They find value in that just by being in those groups.
Okay, peer group pressure and group approval. Good. What about over here?
Okay, we have pretty much the same things like money, power, achievement, happiness, and then human love and approval, sort of one of the same.
Okay. Again, the overall writing thing seems to be approval as the world puts value on it. What about the back row?
One thing we talked about was abilities, sports or...
Okay. Good. Did any of you have the experience growing up as a kid not being very good athletically? And that was kind of a trauma. I experienced that. Okay. Mary, what about the group you were in? Was there anything different that you had?
Possessions.
Possessions. Okay. Looks. You walk into a bookstore and it's amazing the books that you can find on how to dress for success and how to make it in appearance. That's true. Anything else in here? Nothing different? Okay, this is probably nothing new for you to think about. It's all around us. But it's unbelievable how intense the world is going after
the element of significance and value, and yet it seems that it continues to be a perpetual cycle because there's nothing really to the significance that they're going after. I can remember growing up, one of the things that's a precious memory to me is that a lot of evenings my dad would come into my bedroom and tuck me into bed, and I'd like to find this story because I haven't been able to. It's just still a memory in my mind, but one story that he used to tell me about was an animal story. It was a story especially about a turtle that as he lived with the animals, and I guess it was a farm or some land, the one thing that he began to covet was the gift of an eagle. And as he plugged along down on the ground, he'd look up and he'd see the eagle soaring through the sky, and the one thing that he desired to do the most was to learn to fly. And the story went on that he would begin to beg all the other animals, "How do you think that the eagle does it? How can he soar? How can he fly so high? Oh, I'm just so limited down here in this shell. I wish I could fly." And the story went on and on of just the longing in his own heart to learn to fly. And one day he got up enough nerve to ask Mr. Eagle to teach him how to fly. And the wise old owl heard him ask this request and came down and said, "Now, little turtle, you know that you weren't created to fly. You're created with a shell. You have short, stubby little legs. You're created to just creep along and enjoy life." But that didn't make him content. He continued to want to learn how to fly. And so after being begged and begged and begged, Mr. Eagle finally decided that he would give Mr. Turtle flying lessons. And so he began to teach him how to breathe and how to run and how to get ready for the big day that he would take him to the cliff and let him take his opportunity to see if he really could fly. Well, the little turtle tried and tried and tried. He'd work on his breathing lessons and trying to build up his little stubby leg muscles. And the day came when Mr. Eagle took Mr. Turtle to the edge of the cliff, and he prepared him. "Now, you've got to get ready. You've got to run. When you reach the edge of the cliff, you've got to jump, and that's the real opportunity. You've got to flap those legs and breathe, and that's going to be the test." And so Mr. Turtle started on his little runway, and he got out to the edge of the cliff, and the story went that, of course, he didn't make it. He got out, and he tried, and he tried, and he tried, and the story goes on. I can barely remember the ending, and he ends up in the animal hospital, and all the animals come and encouraging him, and he finally decides to just live life as a turtle. But looking back on that story, not as a child, but more from an adult perspective, there's a lot of wisdom in that. There's a lot of sadness in that story, too, because a lot of us attempt to live out the life in the design and through the channel that God created us to live it through, trying to be something that we weren't created to be, trying to be a turtle, trying to be something else that we weren't created to do, when God says, "This is what I want you to do. This is what I created you for." And girls, I can't encourage you more than on a day like today, if you've never really settled it in your heart as to what is my life purpose, what specifically was I created for, than a day like today to begin to get some things nailed down for which you base the whole direction of your life, so that you won't be wandering around thinking, "Oh, if I just had beauty," or, "Oh, if I could just have a few more possessions," or, "Oh, if I could just get that job," or, "Oh, if I could just have a child," or, "Oh, if I could just have a home." The desires go on and on, and those are okay, as we've already mentioned, but the overall writing question is, what are you giving your life to? At the end of your life, will you be able to look back and say, "I did it. I was a fulfilled promise. I was able to go to the places God wanted me to go, and I was able to do the things that God wanted me to do." Mark put it like this in Mark 8, 35 and 37. Someone know that? If you know it, you may want to quote it. If not, you may want to look at it with me. "For what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? For whosoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will also be ashamed of him. And when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." The question in verse 36, "For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his own soul?" Jesus said it like this in John 12:24, But unless we die, unless the seed of grain falls into the ground and dies, it abides alone. But if it does, there's a multiple life. And I want us to look today, if Sandy and Debbie, you could pass out these. Not what it takes to be a person of significance, because we've already seen that the world is looking to be a person of significance. But I want us to go even deeper to what is it going to take for us to be women who have an eternal significance. And I want us to base the next few minutes that we have, and then we'll come back after lunch, on what I believe are five major decisions that we need to make in our life to be women who, as we live out our life and look back on our life at the end of our life, can say we have been women who have had an eternal significance because we've been united with God. The first one I want you to look at is based upon the W, that she's willing to commit herself to her designer. And I can think of no more basic decision that a woman needs to make than that of a decision to have a life commitment. The first decision would be that of having a life commitment based on being willing to commit herself to her designer. The most important thing, this is a very simple statement, but the most important thing about anything is its purpose. Not very long ago, my watch just fell apart. I mean, literally. I was at Six Flags down in Arlington, Texas, and I hit something and the whole watch fell apart. Well, I tried to pick it all up and put it back together, but still it was no value. Even though it looked like something, the purpose had been destroyed. We have a watch in order to tell time. The most important thing about anything is its purpose. Let's say you received a certificate in the mail, and with that was a letter from a distant relative that had passed away, and you were just being informed through the letter that you had gained an inheritance of, let's say, $10,000. And the only thing that you had to do was to sign the certificate and take it to your bank, and their guaranteed was $10,000. So you get to the bank, you pull out their certificate, you pull out the letter, and they say, okay, sign it. And they hand you a pen that doesn't work. How do you feel? It's really functionless. We need pens that write, because the person that designed a pen invented it to write. And you can think about everything that exists. Can you imagine coming in today and attempting to make a chair stand up so that you could sit down? Everything has a purpose. And we rely on purposes. We rely on alarm clock radios to get us up in the morning. If they don't work, we pretty soon, you know, throw them away. Everything has a purpose, and so do we. And until we come directly in a confrontation with that purpose and have a life commitment that, God, I'm going to be willing to give myself to you as the designer of my life and live out my life as you planned it, we'll never experience the eternal significance that God wanted us to experience. I have a situation for us. Let's say that there was a bus waiting out here for us. And we were going to take a bus to, what's the nearest airport, Sarah?
Joplin.
No,
there's one right outside of town.
Okay, let's say that we had arranged a tour for you. We were going to go on a tour, let's say, for a week. You didn't know this, but we came today, and there's a bus arranged out there. We leave, we get on the bus, we drive to the nearest airport, we fly to New York, we board a large plane, and we fly over to the country of Singapore. We get out, and we check in a motel, and you have all your expenses paid, and you're ready to have a week in Singapore. Okay, envision that if you can. And we're out, we're shopping, looking around, and we find ourselves totally surrounded by Buddhists and Hindus. The religion over there is totally different from Christianity. But let's say that they hear that we are a part of a Christian group, that that's how we got together. We were all Christians. We were at a seminar, and all of a sudden we decided to take a trip over to to Singapore. And they begin to wonder about, you know, this Christianity. I mean, I've kind of heard about it. I mean, it's, you know, I know it's a religion, but what is it? And let's say one day we're down in the market area, and someone specifically walks up to you and says, you know, I've heard a little bit about Christianity, and I know a little bit about a God that exists, And I hear that somehow in Christianity there's supposed to be some connection with God and you. I mean, you're supposed to have some kind of purpose in life. What would you begin to tell that person to explain what is your purpose in life? How would you do it? Feedback. What would be some things that you would share? Why were we created? How would you relate just the foundational truths of why we were created? Okay, good. God wanted to have fellowship with us. He wanted interaction. What else? Anything else?
God created us to be a representative of Him here on the earth so that we could explain to others that hadn't met Him yet how to get to Him.
Okay, good. Here's another element. Not only were we created to have fellowship, to enjoy God, have interaction with Him, but we were also created to be representatives of Him. To be doing the things that we'd be doing with that person right there. Okay? Anything else?
Well, God is perfect, and because of our sin, this breaks our fellowship with Him. But He made provision for that in the person of Jesus Christ.
Okay. So you could share about our nature, but in His provision, we have a restored nature. Is that kind of the purpose that you're going? Okay. Good. Anything else? These are good. Hopefully it's getting you to think about how would I really relate my purpose. Anything else?
We're here to glorify
God. Good. Okay. We're here to glorify God. How do we do that?
Well, how would you explain that?
I know, that's what I was just thinking.
You're here to glorify.
That's good. Anyone have a thought on that?
Well, we're here to minister to people on His behalf and help people.
Okay.
Feed hungry people, help people out. That's what people understand first and foremost. You care about me, will you really do anything?
Mm-hmm. If you have that love that God has, will you?
Maybe it's also to demonstrate His character. In that way we glorify Him. You
know, okay.
The good things about me, the positive things I do for you, like loving your children or helping you, or it's a reflection of God's character.
Yeah, that's it. Glorifying God is simply just being a reflector. You know, herein is my Father glorified, that you prove yourselves to be my disciples and bear much fruit. Fruit in terms of character and in terms of people. Well, you've said it, but if I could summarize for you and nutshell it, as I see, our basic fundamental purpose in being here is threefold. One is that we were created to have fellowship with God. And we find that written in the first of the Bible, Genesis 1, 26, 27, and 28. You know, God made the animals, made the birds, made the trees, fish, everything He created, and still something was missing, and it was us. Can you imagine? Us. That's what He created to have fellowship. So we were created to have fellowship with God. Secondly, I believe that we were created, in addition to have fellowship with God, we were created to honor and glorify God. We're to be a reflector of Him, to honor Him, to obey Him. But part of our life purpose is to go around honoring and glorifying God. And then the third purpose is that, I think it was Linda and Vanita brought this out, that we were created to be fruitful and multiply. We were created to be representatives of God, going about and ministering to people. One of the first commands given in the Word of God was that after He created us, made us like Him to enjoy fellowship, He said, "You go, be fruitful and multiply." And in a sense, that very much was a physical command. But as you see throughout Scripture, nothing's given just solely for a physical reason. There's also a spiritual complement. And I believe that the command is just as much to go and multiply and reproduce spiritually. And that's exciting that we can have a place in God's plan. And so, gals, what are you basing the whole direction of your life on? What's your daily purpose? Every day you get up, are you aware that you're one to glorify and honor God? That you're one that God created and put you here just so that He could have fellowship with you? And are daily you aware that I am to go and to be fruitful and multiply? That's part of the purpose. And that's the type of life commitment that we need to make, being willing to just recommit ourselves to our designer in terms of fellowship, in terms of being one that glorifies and honors God, and one that goes and reproduces Christ-likeness in others. Why do you think most people never come to a point of really committing themselves to their designer? You have any thoughts on that? Why would you say most people don't?
I mean,
okay, it seems so logical in a lot of ways, but fear, afraid of what he'll ask for us? And ask us to do. That's right. What else? What? Distracted by other things. Good. I heard something else over here. Lack of trust. Mm-hmm. That's right. And doesn't it all really boil down to the fact that we just don't know God? We don't know His goodness. We don't really trust His goodness. We don't trust that He is all important. We don't know Him, that He's worthy of all of our interest and investment.
We're not convinced that He really loves us more than
we are. Yeah, that's it. We just don't know Him. And I don't know of anyone that's ever come face to face with God and His Son Jesus Christ, but that they haven't fallen in love with Him and given their life to Him. And that's it. That is the purpose. 1 Corinthians 6:19 through 20. You might jot this down. Basic reason is they just do not know who they are, whose they are. We are God's children, and we were bought with a price, and therefore we're to glorify God. And we've been over this and over this verse, but Romans 12:1-2. As a result of this, there's the life commitment. That we present ourselves living sacrifices. You know, that's an interesting adjective. Doesn't say dead sacrifices. We're to be us. We're to present us as God created us to be a living sacrifice. And what does that verse go on to say? What does it say about His will? I heard someone say?
Perfect.
Good. And one other one. Acceptable. There's no reason for fear or mistrust or being distracted. But a basic decision, girls, that you'll have to come to is, what basic life commitment will I make of myself? And I challenge you to be willing to commit yourself to your designer and live it out as He designed you to live it out. A second commitment would be one that's open-hearted to love and serve God and others. And I challenge you there to come to a decision of what is going to be your life motivation. What is going to be your life motivation? And it's to be open-hearted to love and to serve God and others. Because this is a way, in essence, that we glorify God. It reflects the very heart of God. In Jeremiah 31:3, it says, I've loved you with an everlasting love. God is a lover God. John 3:16, one that you probably know, known for many years. For God so loved that He gave. He's not only a lover God, but He's a server God. And if we're going to be about the purpose and the reflection of what God created us to be, we need to be about loving and serving God and others. Do you remember what Jesus' response was when a lawyer wanted to come and probably trick Jesus into maybe a false answer when he came and said, Sir, what would you say is the greatest commandment in all the world? Remember what he said? Okay, you see, here it is again, to love God and to love others. That's it. That is needs to be our whole life motivation, to go for, to love God and to serve Him, to love people and to serve them. And God will tell you how to do it. God will tell you specifically how you need to do that. It may be through loving the children in your home. It may be through supporting and encouraging that husband. It may be through ministering to people in your neighborhood. It may be just baking a group of cookies and taking it to your next-door neighbor. God will tell you how to do it. And it's so easy to look around and think, oh, I sure couldn't do that. How could I ever do that? God has called us to be lovers of people and servers of Him. And that's what it's all about. And it's exciting to think about just the group here. Some of you are in college getting the major, getting the direction that God will send you into. Some of you are homemakers, wives. The channels and the opportunities are unlimited as to where God has placed us and called us. And these things are just the surface, the channel through which He wants us to live out our life. And we're going to have some time for you to be able to work through a worksheet. Deb, do you want to come and explain that in just a few minutes? It was probably about 3 years ago, I guess. My whole life began to shatter because I didn't realize this at the time, but I had started dating a guy in high school and I had dated him about 6 years and had pretty much thought I had my lifeline mapped out. I figured, I'd go to Baylor University, get my degree, we'd get married, he'd go into insurance, we'd get a nice home and I'd have children and, so forth and so forth. I pretty well had it mapped out. After dating someone for 6 years, that's a pretty secure relationship. The year after I graduated from college, it seemed like our relationship began to fall apart. And one weekend, he came down to see me and practically said, my love for you is just gone, and let's just call off the relationship. And girls, I was literally shattered. And in the months, it didn't go away just overnight. You hear these success stories of people that just prayed and committed their life to the Lord, and He worked out things. There was many, many months of deep depression and struggle and nights that I came home from my work just wanting to die. God, just take me home. This is going to be the life that You give me. But in those dark nights, and finally as I began to look up to God and say, okay, God, I'm willing to go on, but what is it that You really want me to do? He began to show me some things, and that was that I'd committed my life, I'd really based my life on some peripherals that really weren't the things that He wanted me to give my life to. And I began to come face to face with what was I going to commit my life to, and how would I live out my life? And as I began those nights to search through the Scriptures and to cry out to God, He began to say, Pam, you're just supposed to go about giving your life to loving me, to fellowshipping with me, and being available to love me and to serve others. And it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable, the sense of self-worth that I had as God began to tell me, hey, I want to use you. I love you, and I have great plans for you. And so we're going to go into a workshop time that will give you some questions. It'll give you some directions as to how you can better get a handle to get in touch with where is God seemingly working in my life right now? Where is He calling me? And in the midst of where He's calling me, how can I overall have a deep sense of life purpose and value in my own life? Well, someone wants three great difficult things to do in life, and one is to grow up attempting to climb walls leaning toward you. Another is to attempt to kiss men leaning away from you. And a third one is to attempt to speak to a group of women after they've had a large lunch. And I can tell you, in growing up, I've had the experience of attempting to climb walls leaning toward me. And I have had the experience of speaking to a group of women after they've eaten lunch. And I know that that's hard, but we'll try to keep it short and sweet. We've talked about some commitments that need to be made, some decisions that need to be made to better prepare us to have a significance, not just a significance that the world is wanting, but one that's eternal, one that will even outlast us, one that when we enter the gates of heaven and look back, one that will be going on beyond just our earthly time here. We talked about a willingness to be committed to our designer, that being a decision of a basic life commitment. We've talked about a decision of a life motivation, that of love that's manifested through servanthood. And I want to talk real briefly about three more. One being a decision to multiply Christ's life that lives within us into the lives of others. And basically, if I could summarize this, this would be a decision to a life ministry. A decision to have a life ministry. And you know as well as I do, as you spent time in the Word and as you've had those special encounters with God, that God does not give things to us to keep. God is not a hoarder God, but He gives in order that we can receive, and then in return we can give. Just as we've already talked about, one of the commands in Genesis, I believe it's chapter 2, he said to go and to be fruitful and to multiply. Christ said it this way. He said, to go ye therefore into all the world and to make disciples. And Paul said it this way in 2 Timothy 2:2, the things that you have heard of me in a group of many witnesses, the same you go and tell other people. And so the very heartbeat of God is that we wouldn't hoard things that God's given to us, but that we'd be faithful as we receive them to multiply His life in us to others. And there's no greater joy than having that opportunity of looking around and by God's grace seeing other people walk on with God because of our lives. If I could ask you a question today, some of you are getting ready. Some of you may not live in terms of semesters. I still live thinking in terms of semesters because we work on the college campus. Some of you are still in the midst probably of finishing a semester. But if you could look back over, let's say, the last 3 months, who do you know that's walking with God today as a result of your life? And I'm not asking you to go into a pride trip or either to go on the extreme of that and have a false humility. But who is walking with God today as a result of your life? Or maybe a better question would be, who's walking closer with God today as a result of your life? Is it the little special ones around your home that you've had an opportunity to reflect the love of Jesus Christ and to share with them what walking with Him is all about? Is it the neighbor next door? Is it some girls through a Sunday school class? Is it a friend that lives next door? But who is the one that's walking closer with God today, or perhaps walking with God today that had never walked with God before as a result of your life? This will be the woman that has an eternal significance, that she has made a decision to have a life ministry, and that being multiplying the life of Christ in her life, in the lives of others. And you know, something that I've seen a lot is that Satan will easily be heard by defrauding in us the thoughts of thinking, we can't do that. How can I be worthy of having a ministry in the life of someone else? And if I could share with you a story found in Mark 5, if there was ever a person that could have given way and received the thoughts of Satan like this, of how could I ever have a ministry? How could I ever be worthy of multiplying what's in my life into someone else's life? This person would. You're probably familiar with it. It's the story of the Gadarene demoniac. The first part of Mark 5 tells about the situation. You're probably familiar with the story, but here was a man that had lived in isolation all his entire life. He would go into fits of rage and tear himself and snarl, and it was just a horrible sight. People from the town ever so often would venture out to see him. But if you can put yourself in this man's place and think what it must have been to live in such a sense of isolation, shunned by society, living in caves and having these fits of rage caused by demons to come upon him. And then one day the person of Jesus walks into his life and touches him, and he's transformed. Now that person, that guy, had every right in the world to at least accept thoughts of thinking, you know, what could I do? I mean, look at my past life. What would I be able to tell them? What have I experienced? And over in verse 18, there's a beautiful story of the people come to Jesus. They don't really know what he's done. They just know that he's cast out demons and this man is different. And this man, the man that has had the demons cast out is wanting to go with Jesus. And he runs up in verse 18 and begins to entreat him that he might accompany him. And Jesus said this. He said, go home to your people and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you. Now this man could have accepted some thoughts of Satan that could have gone something like this. Well, gosh, Jesus doesn't even want me with him. I mean, what do I have that I could multiply in the life of someone else? And yet, in verse 20 it says, and he went off
and he began to proclaim in Decapolis what great things Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. Girls, we have every right in the world to share what Christ has done with us. One thing that we may want to do is to compare our ministries. We may think, gosh, what can I do in comparison to this person? But God wants to use us, and he's equipped us, and he's enabled us, and he wants to do that. I struggled with this when I began to hear the call of God on my own life to be available to share with other people and to be a channel through which God could work. And one day I was reading a story that I'd been real familiar with. Most of you probably are too. But it's the story of the feeding of the 5,000. And all of a sudden my eyes landed on the little boy and his response like what I'd never seen it before. And here was a little boy out in the midst of, 4,999 people. And the situation arises of a miracle. There's no food. There needs to be food brought in. The little boy was out there, had his sack lunch, and it would have been real easy for him to think, well, good grief, you know, sack lunch, I mean, what is this? And yet, what I saw that day as I was reading that passage, the little boy had confidence in what he had. And even more, he had confidence in what God could do. And so there's the beautiful story of the little boy bringing up this little bitty sack lunch, which in no way could feed 5,000. And he gave his sack lunch to Jesus. And Jesus took the sack lunch. It said he prayed over it. He offered it to the Father. And then he literally fed 5,000, and there was leftovers. Gang, we all have our little sack lunch. We all have the life that God has given to us. And the key is being confident in what God has given us, the things that he's taught us. Each of you have beautiful experiences that you've been through that you can share with other gals. And bringing your life to the point of being committed, offering it to God, believing that he's the one that can do the work. And it'll be amazing the type of impact that God will work through your life into the lives of other people. But a woman that does have an eternal significance about her life will be one that makes a commitment to have a life ministry of multiplying her life into others. A fourth decision that she'll need to make is that of a life mission. And that's simply being available to join her life with the cause of the Great Commission. A decision to live her life on mission. Now that's what God is all about. God lives his life on mission, and his mission is people. His mission is people, and his means is us. I still, every time I begin to really think about that on a serious level, am amazed that the channel through which he wants to minister to people is us. Not only does he want to do it, but he's promised to bless us. In John 15:16, it says, hey, you didn't choose me, but I chose you and have ordained you that you should go and bear fruit and that your fruit should remain. And so a woman that wants to be about a significance that's eternal will make a decision to live life on mission. She knows what's on God's heart, and she'll be about doing that. It's real easy sometimes as we're preparing for life to get our life career, our life vocation mixed up with a direction of a life purpose. For instance, when you think of Christ's vocation, what was it? Can you remember? Carpenter. If you were to summarize his life purpose or his life mission, what would that be? Okay, save the world. Someone, was that basically the same? Ministering to people. Okay, to heal the sick, to give sight to the blind. He came to give overall healing. What was the vocation? What was the career of Paul? Tent maker. Acts 18, you find that out. He was a tent maker. How could you summarize what his life purpose was? Okay. One day he's reading his quiet time, having fellowship with God, and God anointed him and said, hey, I want you to go out and bring salvation to the Gentiles. Okay, here's a little bit different one, not specifically laid out in Scripture, but what would be the vocation of Priscilla and Aquila?
Do you remember what they did? Okay, same thing over in Acts 18. Paul and Priscilla and Aquila were tent makers. According to what they did later in that chapter, Acts 18, what do you think we can find out about what Priscilla's life purpose or life mission was? Okay, so support her husband. What, and what did they do together? Okay, they taught the Word of God. Here was this guy that came into their church and was teaching almost the entire truth, but leaving out a few key things. And it said, they brought him into their home, fed him, and began to instruct him more fully in the way. And I'd venture to say that apart from walking with God, supporting her husband, one of the things that she wanted to do, life purpose, was to teach truth. And so it's important that we accept the channel that God's called us to walk in. Some of you may be going into nursing, you may be going into business, teaching, music. The channel God will direct you through, but there's a need to have a commitment to living a life on mission, and that's being about the Great Commission. The fifth thing, and I've just jotted this down because I think the time that I drew this up, this is interesting. This probably wasn't as much of a need as it is now, with there seemingly to be the diffusing of the sexes. But I think a woman needs to come to a point of making a decision to live her life out on the basis of a life perspective, and that is that she never forgets who she is, a woman. A woman. In the beginning, God created man, male and female. And we need to accept the challenge and the fullness of that role in being created as women, to be supporters, to be receivers, to be givers, and all that involves. We need to be distinctly women and to fulfill the role that God called us as women to do, to live in the order, to fulfill the function that God called us to live. And I would say, women, if you come to a point of making these decisions of a basic life commitment, of having a basic life motivation, of having a basic life ministry, having a basic life mission and vision, and living out your life on a basic commitment to have a life perspective of being a woman, you will be significant because God will bless. In closing, I'd like to share a story that I heard not very long ago, and it seemed to summarize so much of how we can get perverted in our view. Sarah and I were just talking during lunch of how easy, when the Word is opened up to us and when we're together in a group of fellowship, truth is so easily seen. I mean, it's like the binoculars are right in focus. And yet it's so easy for truth and vision to become so distorted. But there was a story of a ship returning from Africa. And on this ship were two people. One, there were several other people, but one of the persons on board was a missionary that was returning home to the United States after about 20 years of missionary service. Another person on board the ship was a movie star that had been over in Africa. They had been filming a movie. I'm not even sure what the name of the movie was, but he had been over there for a few days filming a movie. And as they pulled into the New York Harbor, they saw just a large crowd of people standing on the pier, cheering and shouting, and there were banners of welcome home. And all of a sudden, there began to be a sense of just overwhelming pride arising in the missionary's heart. He couldn't believe that the people had shown up to see him. And as they docked and began getting off, all of a sudden, his sense of being welcomed home was shattered because he realized that all the fanfare was for the movie star. And it seemed like they ushered in a car and they drove him off, and all the fans began following the crowd. And soon, the missionary was the only one left standing there on the dock. And he was looking around, and down the road he saw one of his old friends coming to welcome him. And as his old friend got there, he shook hands, and the missionary just broke down crying and related the story. Here I've been over in Africa serving the Lord for 20 years, and we come home, and there's a whole big fanfare for this movie star that's been over in Africa. I just don't understand it. I've been serving the Lord all this time, and he had just been over in Africa for a matter of days. I mean, it just doesn't seem right. And this missionary's friend looked him straight in the face and said, "Well, sir, just remember, you're not home yet. And I think that's significant because we expect the world to cater to us. We expect the world to give us a sense of applause. And sometimes they will. God applauds us and God affirms us through people. But the real key is, where are we really looking to get our significance? God will give it. He's promised throughout His Word to unbelievably anoint and bless our lives as we determine to be women that go after eternal significance. But the ultimate reward is not going to be here. We may not be voted the most successful businesswoman in America. We may not be voted the best dressed woman and have a book written about us. But God is looking upon us. And in the end time, there will be that sign, welcome home, and the significance will be told. And so I challenge you to keep praying for God to clearly give you the vision that He has for your special life, and it'll be great. I encourage you to continue to pray over these sheets. They were good work sheet questions, Debbie. Not very long ago, a friend of mine, I like that question that says, reflect upon a statement. I'm not sure, I don't have the sheet up here, but reflect upon a statement that might summarize your life purpose. That's basically what it's saying. And I'd encourage you to go on and write up a statement of what you want to give your life to. I shared a friend with this about my own not very long ago, and it was several months later, she came in with a big parchment sheet of paper, and she had etched out the statement of my life purpose. And I got that thing framed, and every morning I attempt to look at that to just remind myself of what I'm giving my life to. But we're not home yet. We're on our way. And we'll continue to pray for you that you'll make it in the end. And looking back, there'll be an eternal significance about your life because of the decisions that you've made.